Blog Talk Radio.
Sunshine in today. It is the age of Aquarius, and our awesome astrologer Ron is with us here today. Bonnie, regrettably, has not been here this week. She is still upstate, up north somewhere, and she's in a place where she is beyond technical difficulties. She's in a place without any. She has barely cell phone service, and she doesn't have any computer service. So, she's hopefully going to be back by next week. They ran into some encounters where she was at, and anyway, yeah, enough said. So she'll be back and tell us her ongoing adventures next week. So we'll find out then what is going on. In the meantime, Ron, are you there?
I certainly am. Hello, Kelly, and hello, all you listeners.
Indeedy. You know, I keep forgetting to have you do this, Ron, at the beginning of the show, so I'm gonna do this. Is how do people get a hold of you for, you know, a private chart reading or, and I know you do a lot of other stuff. It's like, you know, it's not just doing somebody's natal chart or their progress chart, you know, their birth chart. But you also do things like, you know, geolocation, or I don't know what it's called. I know you told me the name. It's like I'm having a brain moment right now. But there's a lot of different things that you do with your astrological knowledge that you have when you're helping people. So it's like, you know, tell them how to get a hold of you. And then I'd like to have you tell us a little bit about some of the stuff that you actually do.
Well, anyone can reach me at my email, which is livingastro. That's LIVINGASTRO, livingastro, at AOL.com. Now, as far as the other things that you mentioned, Kelly, there is such a wide range of influence in astrology that so many different applications can be used. When I do a natal reading, I set up a birth chart and a progress chart and use those two together as a tandem team in doing that delineation. Now, everyone has a solar return each year, and that means the sun in the sky comes back to the same degree, minute, and second that it was when the person was born and took their first breath. Now, that can occur the day before a birthday, on the birthday, or after the birthday as the years go on. It isn't going to be the same minute you were born in the same day. In fact, it rarely is. So what you do is you set up a chart for that moment of time when the sun is back at that same point, and the rest of the planets will be all varied, and the chart will be a window of time for that next year of that person's life. From that birthday to the following one, that solar return will give great insight about timing, description, situations, people, work, job, health, money, relationships, etc., down the line. But it only lasts 1 year, and then a new solar return chart has to be cast upon
it. Has to be redone again, right. It's a yearly thing, right. Right.
Now, you mentioned about locations. Everyone must realize that the location you live in also has an astrological demarcating influence over you. Each state has their own astrological sign. And that is based on the day that they entered the union. The president signed them in as an official existing state. And that also indicates that they have a chart. Now, traditionally, the president would sign a new state into the union and then go and have lunch. This has become the tradition since the early entrance of states. So we know that the time states usually are signed in is around 11:45, 11:30, something like that, in Washington, D.C.
Cool.
And you set the chart up for Washington, D.C. for the entrance of a new state, even though the state may be a long distance away. Now, then the state has a chart. Now, every city has a chart. The day that the city was incorporated, that is the birth of that city, and it now has a living chart with not only the sun but all of the planets, just like the state with all of the planets. And so to look as to whether living in an area will benefit you or detract from you, it's very important to know the sign of the state that you were, you're living in, and its statehood day, its entrance day into the union. And it's very important if you live in a city to know the astrological sign of that city. Now I'll give you some examples. I live in Florida, and that entered the union March 3rd, 1845. So is a Pisces state and has the moon in Capricorn. So the chart is set up for Washington, D.C., not for Tallahassee or some city in Florida. For example, some other states, the state of Oregon, let's go to the other end of the country. That's an Aquarius state. It entered the union on Valentine's Day in the
1840s. Oh, wow.
Curiously enough, Arizona is also Aquarius. It entered the union on the same day, but years later. Again, Valentine's Day on 1912. It was the entrance of Arizona. So each state has its own sign. California is the only Virgo state in the country, and people always say, Virgo? Now, what about all the stuff like the flashiness of California, the movies, the theme parks, Rodeo Drive, you know, all of the things about San Francisco and Los Angeles, and how could that be Virgo? But they forget that there's a huge part of California that is agriculturally empowered, that there is tremendous amount of fruits and vegetables and even tree nuts that are grown in the California area and in the Imperial Valley, the San Joaquin Valley. So the state is a big producer of agriculture, and that is connected to the sign of Virgo.
Wow.
Some other examples of the state of Idaho is Cancer. It entered the union during the sign of Cancer, but so is Virginia. That entered the union under the sign of Cancer.
Wow.
There's a lot of Scorpio states, but most of those are out west. The state of Washington is Scorpio, so is
wow.
Montana. North and South Dakota are Scorpio. The state of Nevada, that entered on Halloween.
Wow.
That one is a double Scorpio. The sun and moon were in Scorpio the day that Nevada entered the Union. And the only eastern state that is Scorpio is North Carolina. And it entered on the very last day of the sun being in Scorpio. But virtually all Scorpio states are western. There are some Leo states. Hawaii, the last state to enter the Union, did it on the very last day of Leo. So it's still officially Leo. Colorado is Leo. New York State is Leo. And so you need to realize the day your state entered the Union and whether it is going to be a good thing for you to live there, if you're going to be accepting a job transference or making a life change just to pick up and move somewhere, you need to really see whether that area will conflict or harmonize with your chart.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. That makes a whole lot of sense to me. It does.
Well, everything that has an existence has a chart. And a state has an existence because it is a singular thing unto itself. So is a city. It has an existence, and so it has a chart from the day it is officially incorporated.
Wow. There's a question. Do you happen to know off the top of your head what Texas is? What sign Texas is?
It's Capricorn. It entered the Union. I don't know the exact date, but I'm going to speculate. It's the very ending part of December, so I'm going to say December 28th. So it was that week between Christmas and New Year's. So it is a Capricorn state.
Wow. Okay.
Iowa is a Capricorn state. Let me see. Connecticut is Capricorn. I'm just thinking off the top of my head. You know, those are three examples. Oh, Alaska, the biggest one of all, that's Capricorn. That ended
wow.
in January of 1959.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. Holy moly.
We tend to have a lot of Scorpio states. We tend to have a number of water sign states. Not just Florida, where I'm living, is Pisces. Ohio is Pisces.
Wow.
Vermont is Pisces. There's a few more that are kind of not coming to me right off the bat, but there are a number of states who are. Oh, Nebraska is Pisces. I'm trying to think of a few more.
Because you know what would be interesting I would like to have you actually do this for next week. Is let's go through, we'll get together and let's go through alphabetically and start at the top and let's name all the 50 states and what they are. That would be a really good piece of information.
Not only that, I'll give the date that they were incorporated. Interestingly enough, Kelly, that was one of the big factors in a class that I would teach. I would have
wow.
all of my students handwrite, starting with Alabama onward, through Wyoming, all of the states, and the day they entered the Union, and their sign,
their
sun
sign.
In other words, they have a whole chart, but the sun was the thing that we would remember from those
looking
days
at.
That they
right.
entered.
Right. Wow.
Yes, I would be happy to do that
cool.
next week.
That would be awesome. Thank you. That would be really cool.
Well, we're in the moon's in the sign of Cancer right now. It's in early Cancer, and it's going to be in there for the next 2 days plus. And this is the strongest placement for the sign the moon would be in. And there are quite a few Cancer states also.
Wow. Okay.
And the U.S. is a Cancer country.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, July, I guess. Is it considered July 4th Independence Day, or is like when did it actually become, is that when it actually became, you know, the United States or not?
Yeah, the time that the Declaration of Independence was signed and established into existence, and the breaking away from the mother country and the establishment of the new country, the birth of the new nation, that is July 4th. Although John Adams said July 2nd, he said it will be remembered for centuries as the famous day, and it didn't happen till 2 days later, so it became July 4th, not July 2nd.
Wow, that's really funny. That is amazing. So it must have been something politically or governmentally or something rather that caused that two-day delay.
Yes, exactly, and this is the other thing. There's been all of these fights among astrologers saying, I've got the correct time of the U.S. birth. I've got the correct time. And there's one chart that repeatedly comes up that falls into a pattern that shows a correctness to it. And that is the chart with Gemini rising and Uranus exactly on the rising sign. So I'll give you an example. I don't remember the degree, but let's say the U.S. had 6 degrees of Gemini rising over the eastern horizon in Philadelphia at the moment the Declaration of Independence was signed. Well, Uranus was at 6 degrees Gemini. It was coming over the edge of the Earth. And what is interesting is people say, oh, they planned that, but Uranus wasn't discovered for 10 more years. At the time that the Declaration of Independence was signed, only the traditionally known planets were cognition to the people of the world, as they were for centuries and centuries before them. Mercury through Saturn was the only planetary patterns that people knew. Mercury, Venus, Mars, Jupiter, and Saturn. They didn't know about Uranus. It wasn't discovered till afterwards. So this might be what we call serendipitous fate, that Uranus, the planet of Aquarius, Uranus, the planet that rules freedom, Uranus, the planet that rules liberty, Uranus, the planet that rules individual strength of the self, the power of the individual, Uranus, which rules inventions and breakthrough new items brought into the world, was rising on the U.S. horizon on the horizon of Philadelphia at the time that John Hancock, the first signer, put his name down and as the others subsequently signed. Now, this is what also is very interesting about that chart. It occurs about 2:40 in the morning. And people say, well, no, that's impossible. How could they be getting that late in the middle of the night and signing the Declaration of Independence? But when you look at the danger they were up against and you look at the final decision that they would make, it would be the smartest and most logical time that they would sign the Declaration of Independence in those early hours of the morning.
Yeah. Yeah, because of the discovery, and it's like, yeah, there was like a lot of what we call sneaking around, you know, because they didn't want to be discovered by British troops and be labeled as spies and traitors and all that stuff. So yeah,
they would all have been killed had they been discovered.
Yeah, wow.
Taken into under the auspices of treason, and all have been killed. So actually, there are charts that have given the U.S. a Sagittarius ascendant. Others have given it a Pisces ascendant, and they just don't work. They don't work when you look at the events that occur in the chart of the country and the timings of events. The one that occurred starting at early morning hours fit in Philadelphia.
Wow.
And by the way, there was an Aquarius moon, too, in the U.S. birth chart.
That is really funny. I was thinking philosophical and humanitarian. It's like I was thinking of all the other, you know, trying to think of all the stuff, you know, you were mentioning about Uranus rules. I'm like going, yeah, it's like the biggest thing I always think of is, you know, humanitarian, you know, thinking globally, you know, that kind of stuff is it's usually an Aquarian type of thing. It's like the bigger picture. Wow, that is cool.
Well, the U.S. is also 4 planets in Cancer. If I recall, it's got the Sun in Cancer, of course, Jupiter in Cancer, Venus in Cancer, and Mercury in Cancer. And so that's why it's kind of been the mother of the world, and that's why there's this strong mother energy and emphasis on the mother and the family and the mothering That energy comes from all of those Cancer energies, and that's all ruled by the moon, Cancer.
Wow. Wowie zowie. Oh, my goodness. That is cool. Okay. So we'll have some more of the history stuff next week. And it's like, so what is going on for current events? What is going on in our heavens right now? Because people are still asking that. It's like, you know, people are still kind of going, man, it just feels like, you know, we're in a whirlpool, or, you know, we're being sloshed around with, you know, whatever, with all, you know, the energy stuff going on. It's like, what in the world, you know, well, or I should say, what in the heavens is going on celestially right now?
Well, there is something that's quite interesting, and it was something that was considered for eons of time, for centuries, as being a very negative or fearful event, and that is we are quickly approaching a Mars-Saturn conjunction, meaning they're sitting together in the same sign of the zodiac and the same degree of that sign. They're aligning with each other. And this has always had a very challenging description to it. Even at the time of the Black Death, the bubonic plague, it was blamed on an alignment of Mars and Saturn in the sky. Those were the two planets that the people of past times considered the most negative. They called Saturn the greater malefic, and you can see the word malefic aligned with, you know, malevolence, and they called Mars the lesser malefic. And so they did not like these two alignments. So when I was first studying astrology, I need to show you this interesting story. I first started studying astrology many years ago, and one of the first things I learned within my maybe first 2 months, 3 months, was that Mars-Saturn alignments were considered the most fearful and the most challenging. Now, remember, Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto was not discovered or known to people at that time. Well, these 3 months into my first astrology college study, Mars was coming to align with Saturn. And I was going to university school in the day and taking my astrological college studies in the evening. And I happened to mention to some of my university student friends who were sitting around me in classes saying, over this weekend, Mars is going to conjunct or align with Saturn in Sagittarius. Be very, very careful in traveling. That's an aspect that's very dangerous for traveling and transport.
Wow.
Well, that weekend here in Orlando, Florida, where I'm living currently, and this was in Orlando, there used to be an Air Force base called McCoy Air Force Base, and it was connected to McCoy Jetport. By the way, anybody who flies into Orlando, if you wonder why in the world do you get MCO as the code for Orlando Airport, you're probably thinking that has nothing to do with Orlando or Florida. What does MCO mean? It meant McCoy, MCO, because the old airport there was called McCoy Jetport, and it was right next to McCoy Air Force Base. Well, back to the story. That same weekend, two jets collided over the residential area of McCoy Jetport, where the families were living who were in the military, and they fell to the ground and killed a young boy. I think he was a 12-year-old boy, and, of course, started fires in some homes. But the boy was the only one who was killed because he happened to be outside when they fell. And there was a main road in town that rode right alongside on the outside of this military base, and it was right close to where these planes had crashed and had fallen. I happened to mention to a friend of mine saying, this is a very dangerous configuration in astrology. Be very careful because transportation challenges, accidents, or things could happen. And because of that, he chose his way. He altered his route of traveling. He, for some reason, did not go alongside of that Air Force Base. And he was always on that road outside of that Air Force Base going to and from work every day. And he figured he would have been exactly on the spot driving by where these planes had crashed and had fallen had he not listened to me. And so the next time when we went back to school on Monday at the university, all these people started looking at me and going, ooh, how did you know this? Where did this come from? They kind of looked at me like I was some supernatural being, and I said, well, It was a Mars-Saturn conjunction. But then I got to finally realize in studying astrology further, because I was only new in this. I was only studying it for the first 3 months when this happened. I found out, Kelly, that Mars is conjunct Saturn for the whole world. It isn't just for your own backyard.
The incident
happened right here in our own backyard, but it's for everyone. Well, this is what I'm leading up to. We've got another Mars-Saturn conjunction coming up in a matter of days here.
What day?
This aspect is going to be on August 25th.
Monday. Okay.
August 25th, Monday, this upcoming Monday, Mars and Saturn will come together at 17 degrees 40 minutes Scorpio. Now, what that means is Mars in the sky will be at 17 degrees 40 minutes Scorpio. Saturn in the sky will be at 17 degrees 40 minutes Scorpio, and they will conjunct, as we call it in astrology, or line up together. And that's a traditional aspect that people in the past, in past centuries, past history, have always thought was very negative. Now, the sign they conjunct in is variable. The one that I first told the people about transportation difficulties and be careful and don't drive if you don't have to, that was in Sagittarius back then, and that was the sign ruling transportation. This is Scorpio, and this is something else. This is involving intrigue. This is involving behind-the-scenes stuff. This is involving political clout. This is involving pulling political strings. This is involving political favoritism. This is involving stuff that's stealth and not seen. However, it is still causing a tremendous amount of tension in the world, Kelly, and they are very, very close to each other right now as we speak, and they have been close to each other virtually most of this month.
Wow. You know, what I was thinking of earlier there when you were saying, you know, about the plague and stuff, I remember seeing, I think it was like, had to have been several days ago because I haven't been on Facebook for several days, but there was some kind of news article came out and they were talking about, I hate to say the resurrection of the plague or, you know, the Black Plague that killed so many millions of people, you know, whatever. And it was someplace, I don't remember what country it was in, but there was a, you know, an arising of the bubonic plague again. I think that's what it was. It was a man in Colorado in the United States here. One man in Colorado. He didn't die from it because he went in and got treatment, but his dog, he had a dog that died of the bubonic plague, the Black Plague, because I guess it got like a flea bite. And then it's like, and then the guy got infected and whatever, and then, but he got in for treatment in time. So he didn't die. So they were all concerned, you know, this was going to be an upcoming thing. So I was like going, wow, all these pestilences and all these, you know, diseases and all this kind of stuff. It's like that is highly coincidental from what you're, you know, you're saying with these two being close together but not going conjunct until Monday. So, my goodness. So we should like sit at home on Monday under our umbrellas and, you know, watch the world and see what goes on.
Well, actually, they've been coming to approach an alignment or conjunction since the beginning of August. So it has been a developmenting thing this whole month. They are exact on the 25th, and then they have to separate and spread apart and move on. And that won't really happen until we start getting into September, about around the third week of September. So actually, it's almost a seven-week thing. From the beginning of August till about September 23rd is about the time that we have this alignment, and it's coming to exactness. And it brings out a lot of anger. It brings out a lot of violence. It brings a lot of retaliation. And when you go back, and it occurs, by the way, every 2.5 to 3 years, so it is not a rare thing, but it does repeat. When you go back to times when it actually is happening in the sky and look at the news, and look at what's going on in the world, there seems to be peaks of developmental tension, developmental violence, developmental illnesses. The situation this whole month about Ebola and the two people coming to this country in Atlanta, and there were a lot of people fearful of that being a problem. Perhaps there could have cross-contamination to people here. Also, the very fact that the Ebola made the news and that individuals of this country who were there for things of their heart, like missionary work and that, contacted this disease. Often Scorpio is a sign connected with diseases.
Wow.
So this is a very interesting alignment. Now we know there are three other planets. We know there is Uranus, there is Neptune,
right.
And there is still Pluto. It's a very tiny planetary body, but that doesn't mean it doesn't have an astrological influence, and it is very powerful. Size does not matter in astrology. Distance does not matter in astrology. Pluto may be a tiny little thing, even smaller than Mercury, but it still has three known moons at this point, and we'll perhaps find more in another year. We're going to have a probe fly past Pluto July 14th of next year, 2015, and we're going to have a lot more information about that planet. It is the ruler of Scorpio, the sign where all of this is occurring in, Mars conjuncting Saturn, and it is still a planet, even though it might be in the Oort cloud or at the edge of the Oort cloud, on the very far edge of our solar system, it still is an existing planet and has been used in astrology very effectively since about 6 to 8 years after its discovery, after research put it in charts and found out what sign it's associated with and what its characteristics are.
Right. I was going to ask you really quick. I know you've talked about this before, because there was one, I think was it Pluto or was it, I think it was Pluto that, I don't know, the scientific community, you know, whatever, supposedly drummed out of being a planet. And it's like, I remember you gave us some, you know, some exact times and what happened on there and why it was kind of bogus they did. Like, would you, you know, one of our listeners is kind of, and I can't remember what show you did that on. It's like, could you kind of give us just a quick, you know, thumbnail sketch of how that came to be and it's like, and why it was, you know, Pluto really still is a planet, you know?
It was in Vienna. The city may be wrong, but the situation I'm about to say is correct. I believe there was a large convention of scientists and astronomers from all around the world, and it was met in Vienna, Austria. And after, it was the last day and the closing hours of the event, let's say it was a Friday, Saturday, and Sunday thing. Let's just use that as an example. We're now into late Sunday afternoon, approaching early Sunday evening, and a large percentage of the astronomers and scientists had flown back home. And there was a leftover group there, a small percentage of those that had attended the full entire, let's say, weekend. It was then, when they had that small minority of people, that they came out suddenly, did never announced it during the entire convention until that sudden ending hardcore group was there, and they announced then the vote on whether Pluto should be accepted as a planet or not as a planet, and there were still many there who wanted it to be a planet, but the majority won out. More said no, and they said, we declare it no longer a planet in our solar system. Well, anger spread all around the world, including among many scientists who were at that convention, and said, why didn't you give us a chance to vote? Why did you wait till we were home or on our way home and sneak in this vote to make this so? Well, what's happened is because of that and that decision and that vote, Pluto has been taken out of textbooks, out of classrooms. Teachers are only allowed to say we have planets. The last planet is Neptune. And if Pluto comes up, they'll say, oh, that's not a planet. That's no longer recognized as one. And it was this small group of people that made this decision in a distant area of the world from where we are now in Vienna, Austria, that made their own will become this way.
Right. See, and that kind of bugs me because that's like a small group of people you know, enforcing their whatever, you know, will on the planet as a whole. And, like, to the point where they're saying, okay, you can't even teach it in, you know, classes or schools. It's like, why were they so insistent? Why did they want that out of the mix? You know, that's what really kind of, I've sat and I've pondered on that. It's like, why in the world, you know, why was Pluto so important that they simply felt that they had to get it out of the way and out of the public consciousness? That's what I don't quite get. Any thoughts on that?
The person that spearheaded the organization to vote against Pluto. Even as his email, I believe, is called Pluto Killer. So, I mean, he takes great pride in what he has done. So what I want to tell everyone is, yes, it is a tiny, tiny planet. That is true. Mercury's a tiny planet, too. But what was interesting is years ago, no one knew how big Pluto was. It was too far away, and we didn't have quality telescope imagery to detect Pluto's size. However,
right.
Pluto was going to occult a star. And don't get scared at that word occult. It means hidden. In the
right.
transit of Pluto, scientists all over the world knew it was going to move across the face of an existing star. And they would know when the star would start getting darkened, that Pluto was approaching it and moving over its face, and they would calculate how long that star would be invisible to us because Pluto would be blocking its light to us. And what happened was, sure enough, the crescent shape of Pluto began moving across the face of that star. The star went dark, and then they were all shocked when the star began being seen again, and the crescent shape of the other side of Pluto was now moving across the star, and they began to realize from that moment, this is a very small planet. And
right.
that was kind of the beginning of the downfall. They said, it's not up to par with Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, and Neptune, these big gas giants. It's a small planet, and a lot of scientists from that moment turned their attention away from Pluto or had no use for it. Now, what they did decide, because there was such a worldwide uproar about the releasing of Pluto as an existing planet, that they coined a term Plutoid. Plutoid means a small planet, and they coined that term in honor of Pluto. So actually, they call Pluto a Plutoid planet. They call Sirius in the asteroid belt, the largest of all the asteroids, they call that a Plutoid planet. And so what they've
wow.
done is they've coined the term Plutoid. However, we are in kind of a transition period now because the probe that was launched from Cape Canaveral that had plutonium in it, strangely enough, the element that
wow.
was giving this enough power to get to Pluto because it's so many billions of miles away,
right.
it was launched from the Cape, and it's going to be arriving at Pluto in 11 months, in July of 2015, and it will be doing flybys, it will be doing photographs, and we're going
wow.
to have a much better perception
better
of this planet and its moons.
Wow. Wow, that is interesting. Oh, so Pluto has moons, too.
Well, it has the largest moon per capita of any planet in the solar system. Its moon is so big, and I kind of the name of, it's the boatman that would carry you across the river Styx. They would bury people often with coins over their closed
oh,
eyes because
right.
you would pay the boatman those coins to carry you over to the land of Hades, which wasn't hell, it was the reign of Pluto, and
right.
you had to pay him or you would be stuck forever on the opposite shore. And
right.
It was named in honor of him. I think his name is Charon or Chiron. And that was the name of Pluto's moon. And it is so big, it is about three-quarters the size of Pluto itself. So
oh my
they
goodness.
Discovered that it's the only, it's the largest moon that any planet in our solar system has.
Wow.
In per capita for its home, from its home planet, where it's connected with.
Oh, okay. Okay. Like in proportion. Okay, I got it. Oh, wow.
That's what I should have said, in proportion. Yes, because there are other moons yeah. that are very, very large. There are some that even are larger than Mercury, but for Pluto's size, this moon was like three-quarters of its size.
Holy, and it still revolves around it. That's without pulling it out of its own orbit. That's amazing.
Right, and not only that, Kelly, they've discovered two other moons, and as of today, there are three known moons circling Pluto, and when this probe gets closer and reaches it next year, we'll probably find more moons that we could not see.
Wow. So are they going to, so whatever the scientific convention was, it's like, do they have that every so often? And can the majority of them, you know, go back in and say, hey, we disagree with this. And yeah, we're going to vote this back in. I mean, how come they didn't do that like the next year, you know?
There was a worldwide backlash. And I don't mean from people, all only from scientists who were furious that this was done. furious because they did not have a say-so, furious because they would have voted against the removal of Pluto. The scientists said, oh, there's this Oort cloud, and there's all these comets, and there's all this debris moving around on the edge of the solar system, small asteroids, and Pluto's just one of those. So we're not even considering a planet. It's just an Oort cloud object. And so that's the reason why they – plus it's small, and they decided that it was not going to be considered a part of the solar system as far as a planetary body. See, planets tend to run in cycles. They tend to have, like, the four terrestrial planets, as they're called, meaning rocky planets, are Mercury, Venus, Earth, and Mars. We're smaller, and we tend to have a rocky type of mountainous type of surface. Then we've got the gas giants, the biggest ones of all, Jupiter, which is the largest one, then Saturn, Uranus, and Neptune, and they're just massive planets. And then there's Pluto, and maybe, just maybe, there's another series of planetary bodies beyond Neptune that we haven't given consideration to that may revert to being small and may revert away from the gas giant size, and that's never been considered by scientists.
Wow. That's interesting.
So, it also has an elliptical orbit. It has an erratic orbit. Pluto actually gets closer to the sun than Neptune for periods of time, and it swings way out into outer space. It actually did that, and oh gosh, I hope I don't get these dates wrong, but I think between 1984 and 1996, for those 12 years, Pluto was actually in the orbit between Uranus and Neptune. It had crossed Neptune's orbit, and Neptune was the furthest planet out. And then Pluto swung back into its trajectory orbit out to outer space. It moves the fastest when it's in its own sign of Scorpio. It stays about 11 and a half years in that sign, and that's when it's the closest to the sun. And it moves the slowest when it's going through the sign of Taurus, and that's when it's the furthest out. And it takes 32 years approximately for Pluto to go through the sign of Taurus. So its speed varies depending on how far it is from the sun.
Gravity.
So where all planets have a slight elliptical orbit, Pluto has a very elongated elliptical orbit. But it stays steady in that orbit, and it's now increasing in length of sign time. It went through Sagittarius right after Scorpio and stayed a little longer than Scorpio. Now it's in Capricorn. It's going to stay longer than Sagittarius, then it's going to enter Aquarius, and it'll stay longer yet, and it'll keep doing this until it gets into Taurus, when it stays the longest of any sign.
Wow. That is interesting. That is,
Well, how we know Pluto really has an influence is it works powerfully, overwhelmingly powerfully in individuals' birth charts. The house that Pluto is in will have all of the characteristics that you see of Scorpio and a Scorpio flavor to it. And a person, you might say, oh, that's just a coincidence. Well, someone else will have another place, and there will be an exact Scorpio empowerment. Pluto, in certain alignments and charts, will give great power to an individual. This little tiny thing, billions of miles from the sun, has a powerful influence, and it rules one of the most intense and strong-willed signs of the zodiac, Scorpio.
Wow.
So, well, isn't it interesting how astrology has been part of human understanding for eons of time, but as we have evolved into what we might call a more scientific modicum of addressing things, we've had no use for it because it was believed by so many people of today as a superstition of the ignorant people of the past or a superstitious belief of people who absolutely didn't understand the world and the universe like we do now. So it should have no working to it. But yet when you set up individual birth charts and delineate them, and it is not done psychically, it is done by the placement of planets in the chart, and what they mean, and what they traditionally mean, you get specific, exact
information
and answers
for
people.
I was trying to remember that. It's like I was gonna say right up until that judge in New York declared that astrology was a science. And it's like, tell me that one again. It's like I'm infamous for writing things down on these scraps of paper. And it's like, who was, I remember that it was somebody who was related to two of the presidents. And it's like, and she did, there was a court case involving her because she predicted that, by astrology, that this place was going to burn down. So, and I remember it was a judge in New York, and I don't remember the years. Or the name of the person.
Well, I don't recall the years either, but I'm going to specify it was somewhere between 1900 and 1910, but it was right around the turning of the last century.
Okay.
Her name was Evangeline Adams,
and
she was a direct descendant from President John Adams and John Quincy Adams. She
there we go.
Bear their still last name. And she was a very well-known, brilliant astrologer. And this is what she did career-wise, and she has written books and articles. And Evangeline Adams, well, living in the New York area, and I don't know why she was going to stay in a hotel. Maybe she was living in New York State and being in the city for a reason. She always asks, anytime she goes into a place, what's the date that this place opened? What's the date that this business was incorporated? Well, she happened to ask the manager of this hotel, what day did this hotel open? What was the month, day, and year? And he knew. He told her. And she got a room, went up to her room, set up a chart, and then came downstairs after she did, and she said, I have to check out. He said, what's the problem? And she said, because your hotel is in great danger. It's in great danger of fire, and I do not want to stay here. Well, the hotel burned down during that night. She had moved on. She did not get in the fire. She had moved out, and the hotel burned down. Well, she was arrested because no one believed she set up a chart and said the hotel was going to burn down. They believed she started the fire to prove that her chart was right. They made her the arsonist, and it became a very big court case of its time. I mean, it was a sensationalistic case in which people were following it in huge numbers in New York City and beyond. Here is how it ended up. The judge in the courtroom said, Miss Adams, if this indeed is a science like you say it is, and you can do descriptive delineations, I'm going to give you in this closed courtroom an individual's city of birth, date of birth, and time of birth. I will not tell you whether it's a female or a male, and I will not give you anything beyond that. And he did. He gave her the information, and in front of everyone, including the jury and the individual sitting in the observation area, she set up the individual's chart based on the city, date, and time that the judge had given. And now that she had it set up, the judge said, would you please scribe what you see? And she started describing and describing and describing and describing, and she said, oh, this person is no longer alive. This person died a few years ago, perhaps 3 years ago. I think she said 3 years ago, and this person died from drowning. And at that moment, the judge stopped everything because she had been talking for quite a while describing character, personality, things about the individual's life, patterns of this, patterns of that. And he said, the person whose information I gave you is my son. And you have described him exactly, precisely to a T, and he is no longer alive, and he did die from drowning. And at that point, the judge said, judge made a ruling. And he said, I declare that astrology be declared a science, and it is on the books now in the state of New York. And it is true. The court case was New York versus Evangeline Adams. Not only did she win out, but the judge made the ruling so that astrology was to be a recognized science. And what's interesting is that happened a long time ago. And in all the years since we've checked up with it, meaning astrologers, that law is still on the book. That law still stands.
Wow. That is really cool. That is really cool to know, too. Oh, golly, we haven't even got to your other topic yet, so it's like I'm hoping you can, hopefully we got a little bit of time here. You were going to talk to us a little bit about Canterbury Tales, about the Canterbury Tales and the references, historical or literature or otherwise, that we might find in there. So it's
it's amazing, Kelly, how much astrological information was contained in the Canterbury Tales. I just got reconnected with them after last time I had them, and exposure to them was in high school. But I started to to study Middle English, how to read Middle English, how words were pronounced, how to understand Middle English. And, of course, that was the language that Chaucer and all of the people in the Canterbury Tales would speak. And as I did that, I began reading the Canterbury Tales in regular English and also a few in Middle English, and I was shocked to find out the repeated concepts and references to astrology. Many people remember the beginning of the Canterbury Tales, the very first few words, when it says, when the sweet showers of April have pierced the dryness of March, and then it goes on. And then a few sentences later, he says, when the young sun has run his half course in the sign of the ram. Well, that's a reference to the sign of Aries, the sign of the ram.
Wow.
And the young sun run its half course in the sign of the ram. So what's that referring to is the sun being in the sign of Aries. And why would he call it the young sun? Well, it could be for two reasons. It could be the spring sun, the sun getting warmer for spring. But it's also because Aries is the first sign of the zodiac and has always been the first sign of the zodiac. And to say the young sun, that's also a reference to the sun is in the first beginning sign. And that's in the introduction. And there's many characters that he describes and meets, and one of them is the Man of Law, and there are many prologues to them. In the Man of Law's prologue, the date is established as April 18th. Now, the Man of Law's tale is considered a tale of the second day on the road as pilgrims. Thus, the departing time was April 17th. So we even know from the reference in the Man of Law that there is these established days as April, and that the pilgrims departed on their journey from Southwark to eventually be days later to arrive in Canterbury on April 17th. And sure enough, Aries. Now, the first tale told by the knight, he was talking about, it's a nobleman and two men who fall in love with the same woman. And there was one comment in it saying, some malign aspect or disposition of Saturn has caused this. So even there was a negative comment about the planet Saturn and the connection to imprisonment and Saturn being considered a harsh planet. So there's so many things, like in the Man of Law's tale, he describes the planetary configurations on the day of Constance's departure. You probably don't remember this, or few people may remember this. His main...
I remember being in high school and like that's about it. That's been a long time for me, Ron.
Well, Constance was
right
the female figure in his tale, and the king of Shah of Syria fell in love with her and sent for her to come to him. And he said that the day of her date of departure, the ascending sign is Aries, which is classified as torturous. Mars is the influential planet or lord of the ascendant, and the moon has been said to be connected to a bad planet, which means probably the moon was conjunct Mars at that time. That was an old term for conjunction. Actually, that sounds like the word for night. When I was studying Middle English, the word that everyone laughs at when they study Middle English is the word for night. You know, knight on a shining horse. We pronounce him knight. But back then, the word was pronounced knicht. So it's funny how that word changed so much from knicht to knight. The nun's priest tale, that was the one that told about Chanticleer, the rooster, and about the talking animals.
Okay.
Remember that one? And Chanticleer is well-versed in astrology. In the comments, he says, by looking at the sun, it stood at 21 degrees and more in the sign of Taurus. That's an actual comment in the Nun's Priest Tale and said by Chanticleer the Rooster about the sign of Taurus. But the best is the Wife of Bath's Tale. Now, everyone knows her. She was the character that stands out in so many people's minds. She mentions in her prologue to her tale that she was married 5 times, and she talks about her various husbands, and she talks about her life, and she is quite a character. But there is an interesting, specific comment about astrology in her prologue. She proudly proclaims that she has been married 5 times and attributes her romance, her romantic nature, to her horoscope, and she says, "Certainly Venus influences all my feelings and Mars my courage. Venus gave me my desire, Mars my boldness. Taurus was on the ascendant when I was born and Mars in it." And she goes on to say, "And I bear the mark of Mars on my face and in my private areas." Which is very interesting because she's saying that she was born when Taurus was rising. Mars was in Taurus in the first house, and when Mars is in the first house, there is almost always a mark, scar, freckles, or something on the face.
Perfect.
And she comments here that she was not only born with Taurus rising, but Mars in the first house, and she bears the mark of Mars on her face. And
wow.
In fact, that's where we get the word mark.
Mars
and Mark,
like
M-A-R-K-M-A-R-S.
Mars.
So,
wow.
So it's interesting that these are just a few examples, but there's so many things here that I can't. Oh, yes, there's one more I want to share with everyone. I forgot about this one, and this was done by Chaucer himself. This was near the very ending of the book. And Chaucer says, "My guess was that it was 4 o'clock, since at that time my shadow was 11 feet in length as against my height, which is 6 feet."
Oh,
so
wow.
This is how people told time. You know, no one stops to think. They didn't have watches. They didn't have clocks.
Yeah.
They only had a very few rare bell towers, and they weren't always accurate. How did people know time? They didn't carry around
sundials.
Roman...
They had sundials. Somebody had a sundial back there somewhere along the way. I remember sundials.
Well, they,
but they had
sundials,
to be
but they were in fixed locations. And if they're traveling, how could they tell their time? People
time.
Back then were very proficient in seeing how long their shadows were. And
wow.
He said his shadow was 11 feet long. He's in 6 feet high. And that means it was around 4 o'clock in the afternoon based on the length of his shadow. So people would look at their shadows and know the time. And actually, this also proves another thing. Everyone keeps telling us how short people were, how short people had gotten.
Right.
Chaucer himself says he's 6 feet tall, as
tall.
Kind of an average man today.
Wow.
He says further along, not only was the 11 feet long was the shadow, and he was 6 feet tall, further the moon's exaltation, I mean Libra, was still ascending. Well, there is one change in that. We no longer think of the moon exalted in Libra today. We think of it exalted in Taurus. But in his time, it was considered in its second most powerful placement, other than Cancer, in Libra, and that he was saying Libra was rising. He could tell from the length of the shadow that was around 4 o'clock in the afternoon, Libra was rising. And that would make sense because if the sun was in Aries, the sun would be going down, or should I say Aries would be going down in the western sky, and the opposite of it, Libra would be rising in the eastern sky. So these people were so proficiently well-versed in astrology, they could determine what signs were rising. They knew where the moon was at various times. They could tell by the length of their shadows what clock time of the day it was. So these were not dumb people.
Right.
As much
yeah.
as you think.
Yeah.
But it's interesting, astrology just ran in a permeating way throughout the Canterbury Tales, and I would tell every listener to pull out their Canterbury Tales book or go and buy a new one and start reading it, and you'll be quite pleased to find out how many references of astrology were in there, talked by not just Chaucer, but by the pilgrims themselves.
Wow. Because people, yeah, because it was a less, I'll say a less technologically oriented society, because they didn't have the technology we have today, and they depended a lot more on, you know, they watched the moons, they watched the heavens, they watched the sun, they watched, you know, the seasons, and it's like, you know, and they knew when to plant and how to plant and, you know, that kind of stuff. It's like they were more closely oriented to the earth and, you know, being productive, that kind of stuff.
Well, every educated person in that medieval era would know astrology. It was part of their education. And the wife of Bath, who by her own description was not an educated person, even people such as herself knew thoroughly about astrology. And it was one of the scientific axioms of the time. Of course, there were a few things like alchemy that was believed in then that is no longer accepted, like changing metal, iron to gold or something.
I was going to say lead to gold. Although, you know, I've read some more modern stuff about that, Ron. It's like this was a few years back. This was, I'm going to say, probably back in the late 1990s, early in 2000, that I'd actually read some, you know, some articles. I wish I should have clipped them out and, you know, and saved them. But they were talking about how, the Catholic Church was very powerful at the time, but how it got so wealthy. And it was one of these priests or abbots or somebody that they literally squirreled away in the basement, and he was a chemist. And they said there actually is some way, if you can trigger the chain reaction in the molecules and in the atoms, that if you can, it's like dominoes. It's like if you can start the effect, it's not instantaneous. It takes like a day or two. But if they can actually start the molecular construction or reconstruction of the atoms within lead, it can be changed to a different property. In that case, you know, in this case, it's like they were more than just rumors. It's like they were at some point changing lead to gold. And that's how the Catholic Church in the Middle Ages got so wealthy. There is that out there. And I was like going, wow. So there is some actual scientific construct for it, that if you can, you know, get a chemical molecular chain reaction happening, that it will actually do that very thing. So I'm like,
Isn't that interesting? And that may show that they actually may have knowledge of that chemical derivative that has either been kept secretive or has been lost for history. Because
I'm thinking kept secret, because think about it. If the common person knew how to take lead or any other, you know, substance and change it into gold, it's like, gee, what would that do to our gold standards? Like all of a sudden everybody'd be wealthy. You know, think about it. It's like, oh my goodness, that would be terrible if everybody had, you know, lots of money, or would it?
Well, that could be one of the reasons why alchemy was suppressed then. Maybe it was deliberately suppressed so people would not find out its power of transformation.
Right. See, that's what I was kind of asking about. It's like, you know, so what was there about Pluto that, you know, somebody would want to suppress the effects that Pluto has, you know, on us either generationally or, you know, because all I kind of remember is where Mars is like, you know, the god of war, and there's, you know, anger and aggression, you know, that kind of stuff. It's like Pluto is Mars up an octave. It's about power and control and that kind of stuff. And I was like, so I'm going, okay, so why would somebody, you know, I'm thinking somebody may or may not have the knowledge, but it's like, why would they be so hep on, you know, let's get rid of this as a planet. This, like, you know, we don't want this acknowledged. It's like, I'm thinking there's got to be more to it than what, you know, met the eye, even at the science convention. It's like there was a reason that they were trying to remove Pluto as a contender in, you know, in charts or anything else. So it's like it's like one of those hidden motives, you know, one of those hidden things going on. You know what I mean?
There's a reason. There's great wisdom in what you're saying. This has been discussed among astrological gatherings and astrological conferences. Among many other things, Pluto rules deep inner wisdom, deep inner knowing, gut level and beyond insight and knowing. It also is connected with directing power to others, or directing energy to others. It's the planet of healing, among things. It is people who have Pluto in the first house, all of them have greater power to learn healing directives, whether you call it Reiki or you call it other forms of understanding how to send healing energy. But Pluto is the planet of directing energy onward to others or to other things. And so there would be a deliberate thing not to let people have that ability, because if people become wise as to things going on, they could start directing power against things that they don't like, against organizations that they don't like, against situations they don't like. It isn't just sending healing and energy coming through them like a conduit. In other words, they're not the healer. They receive healing as a broadcast unit, as a like a TV antenna tower, and then they send that energy out to someone else. But it
right.
also is the power to send to other places, people, and things. And
right.
so there could be a deliberate attempt to not
to kind of cover, yeah, like to cover over the knowledge, because I know a lot of stuff going on today, you know, like the sodium fluoride in the water, that's designed to dumb people down. It's like what they're doing with our education system, that's dumbing people down. You know, it's like they're trying not to let people, I mean, you know, you look at our education system, it's not encouraged for people to daydream or to, you know, meditate or to get in touch with, you know, their inner sense, their inner knowing, their gut hunches, their, you know, intuition, whatever it is you want to call it. It's like they're trying to suppress all those and their higher brain functions. It's like it involves, you know, what, the hypothalamus, the pituitary, the pineal. It's like, you know, all those things literally that are in our head that would elevate us and allow us to, you know, break through or rise or, you know, rise up to greater heights. It's like, you know, somebody sure, you know, somewhere sure is trying to suppress that kind of knowledge for the masses. It's like it does, it would, I mean, it's kind of like in the Middle Ages, you know, how they kind of did that same kind of thing where, you know, the church wanted to be all powerful. So they really tried to tamp people down. They really just, you know, wanted that peasant class, you know, the workers, the worker drones, you know, whatever. And they did not want to let the masses have any kind of intellectual stimulation to be able to rise above what they were doing. So I find it interesting that history is going in cycles. It's just it with the advent of the technology that we have, though, it can't be the exact same tamping down that they succeeded in the Dark Ages and in the medieval times. Does that make any sense?
Well, the greatest thing, people who have hidden agendas, black agendas, hidden agendas, and I say black in the sense of something really like a stealth, hidden, dark, black agenda for doing challenging things against others or against masses of people, the greatest thing that they fear is the masses becoming awakening to what's going on. And the second greatest thing, and probably even more powerful, is they're afraid of the power of the individual to send thought forms and to send directives against them to stop them. So the thing that Pluto represents is the enlightenment and the power. Pluto's called the great revealer, going on as hidden, that aren't necessarily good, and then the power to start transforming it or stopping it. And there are people and individuals and organizations that fear that more than anything else. They don't want people enlightened, and they
right.
don't want people to be conduits of power for healing or other reasons. And so Pluto represents these various things. So it has
right.
been, people have often said it's been fascinating how it's been almost deliberately discarded as a member of our solar system and looked askance at it like, oh, it's just a piece of tiny rock floating out there.
Yep, exactly. Exactly. This is interesting stuff that goes on this planet. It's like I look forward to someday going, you know, somewhere there's got to be a history of everything that went on, because I know there's so much of a, you know, of the history of this planet that we don't know. I mean, you know, you look at like the Nazca lines, and I'm kind of taking a tangent here, but it's like, you know, some of the stuff in South America, it's like, you know, this planet is very old with, you know, a lot of ancient cultures. And I look at it and kind of go, do you have any idea, you know, you might be able to look it up, where exactly did the science of astrology begin? Like, you know, what is there, like a century, a date, you know, a founder? How exactly did it start?
No one knows. In some of the most ancient archaeological digs, they found versions of zodiacs or working zodiacs. In some of the oldest in time going back in history, they found a zodiacal reference or a symbol of the zodiac or a zodiac itself. So it has been in existence as long as we've been able to trace, and even beyond that. So no one has an answer where how long it's been in the knowledge of human beings. But that means human beings for eons of time have had a knowledge that things around them in their own solar system are not just big gas bodies or pieces of rock that are just revolving around the sun, that they do have an energy. They do have a connecting energy, and that these energies are the most empowered on the human being when they are born and come into life and take their first breath, and that one of these things we call a planet will be in a different way of expressing itself in one area of the zodiac than in another. For example, July 15th of this year, Jupiter left Cancer and entered Leo, and it is very different in its characteristics, its manifestations, its expressions in Leo than it was in Cancer. So we also know that the same planetary body can have a very different way of being in whatever sign it's in. So it has 12 ways of being in the 12 different signs of the zodiac. And then it gets even more complicated than that. How does one planet relate to another planet in angular distance? How certain planets at 120 degrees apart from each other have a harmony, a trine, as we call it, a good luck aspect, a trine. And at other angles, 90-degree angles, right angles, they have a natural harshness and a natural friction and a natural antagonism to and from each other. So even planets and signs, they can change to another sign and be very different, but then they're also the angle to other planets. This is a very complex study. And people on this very show, and I've heard them, have said, I've studied astrology. I've taken on the study of it, and it is very involved. It is not just knowing 12 signs and that's it. It is way deeper than that.
Yeah, exactly.
So, well, I hope we've answered all the questions today or going through the topics that were of interest to people.
I'm thinking so. We've had some commentary going on in the chat. It's like apparently I didn't know what conspiracy theory meant. It's like okay. It's like maybe I am one, but I phrased it as, you know, a lot of the stuff that goes on is meant to keep people down and, you know, not let them rise above. And yet we say this in a way, it's like, you know, it's kind of like opening the closet door, you know, it's like spring cleaning or years later or whatever, but it's like, you know, we want to open the closet door and shine a light in there, not in order to be afraid, but in order to, if you will, you know, face our fears, take the shovel and the broom and clean all the spiders and the boogeyman out of the closet. But we don't want to do it in a mode of fear. We don't want to do it because, you know, there's also stuff I've, you know, been reading on too about how fear is actually a really low and slow, you know, if you think of vibrations like, you know, sine wave vibrations, it's a low and slow vibration. Whereas when we are dealing with a love vibration or a light vibration, it is really high and really fast, and the little, you know, up and down things, if they're like, you know, an EKG, is like are really like close together, and part of that has to do with activating our DNA. It's like there's I don't know, I've read, again, I'll just say theories because I can't prove any of it, you know, but there's theories that, you know, we actually have, I think it's 64 DNA sequences or whatever, and right now we've only got, you know, about 21 of them activated, and it's like, and part of our mission is to bring light, you know, bring love, bring joy, you know, so we can look at this stuff and kind of laugh about it and go, oh, wow, that's really kind of silly. It's like, you know, well, how are they going to keep us down, you know, if we're just going to laugh at them and go, you guys are goofy, man. It's like, you know what, you know, we refuse to be, you know, intimidated or unenlightened or whatever. So it's like, we're just going to go forward, ha, 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 you know, and we activate more.
If something is being conducted in a stealth way and deliberately being conducted in a stealth way for whatever motives the powers that be who are conducting it, the last thing they want is consciousness being raised to discover what they are, who they
exposure.
Are, and what they're doing. And
right.
The next point, the power of the individual to understand that I have a point that I can start changing that by my
right.
mind power, my intent, my visualizations. And Pluto gives that power for visualization. Pluto gives that power for a mind intent. Pluto gives that power for sending energy to some other source.
Right. That's why I was sitting there going, it's like, I think they need to make Pluto back in the headlines. And I think the next time these, you know, science people get together, it's like they need to go, no, Pluto's really a planet. We're going to vote on again with a majority.
Well, we're going to have a real issue with that. I really want it back. Of course, other people I know do too. But it's become pretty established now as a non-existent planet in the school system, in all the textbooks, in all the lectures, in all the ways, even if you talk to an astronomer, oh, Pluto, that's just a little piece of rock out there. That's what they'll say. They don't take it seriously. They don't even look at it as a planet. However, the one thing that might change all of this, and I'm hoping it will be the flyby in 11 months in mid-July of 2015 of the probe beyond Pluto to see exactly what, I mean, we already have photographs of it. If you need to know what Pluto looks like, go into your search engine and write in a photograph of the planet Pluto, and it's an orange-yellow planet. It's very different looking than any other planet we've ever seen.
Wow.
Its surface has orange and yellow and dark markings on it. It's really quite fascinating. And, so we'll be able to learn more about it, and we'll be able to learn more about perhaps its size, and maybe it's a little bigger than what they thought. They think they've got it pretty much determined, but we're going to see a lot more when we get this flyby, because we'll have a probe right by it next.
Next July?
Actually July 14th, 2015 is the day that the flyby is scheduled to actually be in its closest proximity to passing Pluto. And we'll also have photographs of its moons and perhaps even discovering other moons. They've sent probes to all the planets. That's why we get these beautiful photographs of Neptune, that giant blue planet that looks like a giant ocean suspended in space. Uranus is kind of greenish, blue color. Of course, Saturn, Jupiter, we've had those probes a long time. So we've been able to get all these planets, and they've never been able to get one to Pluto until now, and one is on its way.
Wow, that is amazing. That is amazing.
It's taking years to get there, but it'll get there. So,
yeah.
Well, I thank you for having me on today. I know people probably want reading, so I'll get off to allow them to have reading.
No, I was going to say, you know what? This has been really a quiet day for us. It's like we actually started off, you know, when we first came on, we had several callers, and it's like as time progressed, you know, it's like they all kind of dropped off. So I'm kind of going at a spot where I'm like, well, you know, have no callers, so it's like I'm going to probably log off too. So, you know, Ron is like, if you have anything else you want to add, it's like now's a good time because we got time. If there's any other topic or something, because I was kind of scrounging my mind. It's like because I know I've had questions on different things that you said, you know, in the past and, you know, in past shows and stuff. And I was thinking I should just get my little notebook and go, okay, questions I want to ask Ron when we have time.
Moment. Well, is anyone asking any questions also, along with yourself, anybody who, other than reading stuff, which I cannot do because I don't have their chart set up, are there any questions any caller would like to ask?
Like I said, right now, queue's empty. It's like we have no callers, so I'm just going to throw it out there to the chat room and say, you know, does anybody have anything they want to ask Ron? You know, really quick, type it in there. It's like we'll put it on here and see what he's got to say, astrologically speaking. It's like we got several people in the chat room, so it's like if anybody's, you know, it's like Organic Skies, Rihanna, Walk, and Boo Boo. It's like, you know, if you guys have any questions that you want to ask Ron, it's like today is the day because it's a quiet day, the lull before the storm. And it's like, and I'm going to reiterate that. So it's like on Mondays, guys, Monday is a good day to lock yourself in the basement, you know, with the umbrella over your head.
It's also the new moon on Monday. The sun and moon will be sitting together in Virgo.
Wow. So there's a new moon as well as this conjunction. Oh, my goodness. So what's that going to bring?
Well, the new moon occurs at 2 degrees, 19 minutes Virgo. That means both sun and moon are at that degree in the sky. And, of course, that's also called the lunation, another term for the new moon. And we have those about every 27 and a half to 28 days. We have 13 new moons a year. And this one is the Virgo new moon. Now, I'm wondering if we're going to have two in Virgo because this one is occurring so early in the sign. It's occurring at 2 degrees. Let me do one quick check here. I've got a book called An Ephemeris, and I want to double-check one thing here.
Okay.
And
while you're
it misses it. The next new moon beyond that is 1 degree Libra. So we don't have two new moons. Then we have zero Scorpio. I think we have two in Scorpio. And then zero Sagittarius. Then zero Capricorn. So, okay, we have a new moon per sign for each sign between now and the ending of the year. So it is interesting that this is the Virgo new moon. That's the sign, or a sign, not the only sign, ruled by Mercury. Mercury rules also Gemini. That's a very detailed new moon. That's a very good new moon for health or health work. That's a very good new moon for health observations, like going to a doctor or a medical appointment. That's a very good new moon for a massage therapy to have that done. That's a very good new moon to go and find or to look for health food or new health foods or going to health food stores or looking for supplements. Virgo is connected to all of that. It's also a very good new moon for cleaning things, just taking the dust rag and cleaning everything down, sweeping, vacuuming, cleaning, because it's a very fastidious new moon. Let's put it that way.
Perfectionistic,
connected to health, connected to details. I'm sorry, go ahead.
The questioner was like, can you tell in a chart who, you know, by your somebody's birth chart or, you know, natal chart, can you tell on a chart who is psychic?
Yeah.
That was one of our questions.
It is noticeable. Usually a person of high-level intuition has a couple of common things. They often have a lot of planets in water signs, and water signs are planetary placements in Cancer, Scorpio, or Pisces. And if they have four or more in those three signs, there is the foundation basis for psychic enhancement. The other thing is the eighth house of the chart. How many planets are in that house? If that house is loaded with planets, that's also another indication of intuitiveness. Now, the great intuitive James Van Praagh has like four or five planets in his eighth house. I remember seeing it once, and there were so many planets in there, you kind of had to separate them visually because they were so close together to look at. And that is one of the reasons why he has had intuitive abilities and awarenesses in his life. But he does not have a lot of water signs, but yet that house is occupied. But just in the normal range of things, if you have a lot of water sign placements, that will enhance psychic ability. Now, that doesn't mean everyone will understand you. You may be born into a family in which people have earth signs, air signs, other kinds of placements, and here you come with like six water signs, and you feel things, you sense things, you see things, you have intuitive dreams, you get even stronger in your intuitiveness as you grow older, and not everyone will understand that because they don't have that kind of combination in their chart.
That makes sense. Then there's kind of a generic question. I'm trying to get this back. It was just that, do you have any things for Aquarians and like another birth star signs? So I'm thinking it's you know, it'd be like what properties? I don't know. I mean, like maybe what's the difference between an Aquarius sun versus an Aquarius moon, or you know, other things like that. It's like, is it just general properties or general traits that Aquarius, you know, brings to you know, like a chart, or I'm not positive what the, you know, what the question is, but it just, you know, just what says, you know, got anything for Aquarians? I'm like going, okay, I don't know, Ron.
Well,
what can you
Aquarius
tell
is connected in various ways, depending on what planet is in it. Now, the moon in Aquarius, the moon defines your emotions. The moon defines the emotional expression or emotional capacity of the human being. And an Aquarian moon is not necessarily an highly emotionally, outwardly emotional person. They are an individual who can be friendly and smile and nice, but that does not mean that emotions run their life, because it's a sign that tends to think first and feel second. It's more connected to mental cerebral awareness. So an Aquarius moon can be an emotionally cautious person. Now, an Aquarius sun, that's totally different. That's
okay.
The people born in that one segment of the year in which the sun is in Aquarius. And we have had a lot of U.S. presidents, by the way, born under Aquarius, too. Aquarius suns tend to be innovators. They tend to be reformers. They tend to be pioneers. They tend to be freedom-orientated. They say, don't pen me down. Don't put me under your thumb. I'm an individual. I think for myself. I understand. For example, an Aquarius child, you show them how to tie their shoelaces. And then when you go to do it the next time, they'll say, no, 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 I can do it. I can do it. And they'll tie those shoelaces.
They're
quick to learn, and they want and need the independence of doing it themselves. Once they're shown, they've got it. And this is the way Aquarians work. They're experimenters. They'll try new things. They'll try different things. They'll pioneer new territory. They are the natural inventors of the zodiac. But they also can be a little, they're friendly. They smile a lot. They laugh a lot. But that doesn't mean they're emotional. They more...
Right.
Or less, and I've had many Aquarians tell me this, they kind of in their life think of emotions as kind of a weakness. They think of it as kind of, they look at people who are highly emotional and they'll say, oh, isn't that a pity? You know, they're just so emotional. Can't they just be more calm? You know, they tend to see things in a more calm, directed manner. Now, the confusing thing to most people is Aquarius smiles a lot. It's funny. It's got a natural good timing and sense of humor about it, and they think that the smiling and all that means high, high emotional people. Well, Aquarius is not emotional. Pisces is. So is Cancer. So is Scorpio. So they are a sign that tries new things. They're unique unto themselves, and they're very interesting in the future. They're not always past-orientated. They're interested in what's coming up. And if they're interested in the past, they learn cycles from the past to see how those cycles could be applied to future timing and events.
I'm sitting here wondering if that's who coined the phrase, you know, those who do not study history are doomed to repeat it. That was an Aquarius.
That is an Aquarius energy. And in the U.S. chart, we've got the moon in Aquarius, and yet we've got a chart loaded with water signs. We've got, like, 5 water planets in our birth chart, I believe, in the U.S. birth chart of 1776.
Wow. Okay, we have, one of our chatters is like, she and her husband and their child are all Aquarians. I went, that's got to be an interesting household.
Well, the thing is, everybody in that group has been an individualist in the household they were growing up. The mother and father were unique and individualistic people and thought as such when they were growing up. They may have been the front runners to try new things or be experimental or open their mind up to new ideas that other family members, when they were growing up, didn't understand. Sometimes an Aquarius is considered a black sheep in their among their family members because other family members don't understand their individualness and uniqueness. Now, they've got a great gift. Both father and mother, being an Aquarius, knew what that was like growing up as a child, and now they should give their child the ability to be a powerful individual, an individual to express himself or herself, and an individual to be unique unto them. That doesn't mean no rules or running wild. It means that they can understand how others did not understand them. That's one of the biggest problems Aquarius have as a youth, is people not understanding them because of their own individualness and uniqueness. Or sometimes people will say, oh, they're just rebellious. They're hard, so they just want to do their own thing. And actually, they just have a sense of self-exploration and developmental expression. So they can really help that child in the development of the uniqueness unto themselves and still stay within the framework of rules and laws.
Right. I sit there, I'm laughing because I'm sitting there thinking, it's like so far you totally, you know, just generically described, you know, my childhood. And it's like, and I kind of laugh because the area that I'm living in, it's like, it's still that way. It's like, They go, really, that's the weird lady over there. It's like, oh, thank you. Love you. Love weird. That's me. Yep.
I guess Aquarius too often get that term, the weird lady or the weird man. But they, the thing is, interestingly enough, every sign of the zodiac has its own directive uniqueness. And another air sign, like a Gemini or Libra energy, would probably be the easiest and first one to understand in Aquarius and understand their intelligence and understand their thinking and understand their ways of viewing things and learning more. But the other signs can be a little awkward in dealing with Aquarius because they don't always understand them. It's a sign that's very complex, and it's one of those that parents often scratch their head and say, I don't understand this child. The other ones I understand, but this one I don't understand. They have their own way of doing things. They have their own rules. Yeah. They have their own mindset. They have their own way of connecting and dealing with stuff. Well, that's the Aquarius way. It's the way of the individual.
Yeah. You know, and what's interesting is like I look at family dynamics as part of that because, okay, my mother was Cancer. My dad was Virgo. My two siblings, I had one that was very solid in the middle Taurus and then one was like Taurus Gemini cusp. And it's like, and that was my sister. And it's like, she was the only one who really related to me. And then I go forward and I look at my family structure now and my husband was Sagittarius. You know, I'm Aquarius. My oldest child's Gemini. The next one was Leo. The next one is Aries. And then the fourth one was a Capricorn and the last one's Aries. So here we have this poor Capricorn child. In the middle of all the fire and air signs, and we all kind of go, what's that? So, I mean, and I relate to her in the sense that that's the position I was in my family. I was the black sheep, and it's like, and there's a lot of times we just kind of go, okay. It's like, okay, Capricorn dear, it's like, yes, we love you, and we're not sure what you're doing, but it's okay. And Maggie was saying that with hers. It's like she, you know, it's like a lot of things that you were describing because she's very Pisces and she's got all the, you know, the Pisces signs. And she said, like, in her family, she was the black sheep. And I was going, it'd be interesting to know, you know, the rest of her family dynamic. It's like, you know, because if you got a lot of fire and air, you know, fire and air parents with, you know, with the child who's like, you know, water or earth, it's like you, they have to go the extra mile to go, what's this kid about? What is this child all about?
Precisely.
We don't know.
It isn't just Aquarius and other people. It is also just what you said, I don't want to say lineage, out of majority signage, when a whole majority of people have all of this compatibility, interreactionary signage, and then you get someone else who's completely of a different sign, astrology sign combination, they're the individual that the people don't understand. What's very interesting is if you think of the 12 signs of the zodiac as 12 ways of being in the world, 12 ways of energy. And in my very first class when I teach astrology to students, I explain to people those signs and the characteristics of them, Aries, Taurus, Gemini, etc., all the way through Pisces. Those are the energies that we, as evolving souls, are working on and working with because it is through those constellations that our planets move. In other words, there is a constellation of Pisces. There is a constellation of Leo.
Right.
Those grouping of stars that make up that constellation in the concept of this produce a group energy, and that is what creates the characteristics of Leo. We may say Leo is ruled by the sun, but the sun transmits that energy like a broadcasting tower to our own local backyard solar system. So
right,
what I'm trying to say is living here in this galaxy, in this solar system, this is the key in this galaxy, in this solar system, in this galaxy, our planets make a complete belt moving around through 12 constellations, 12 signs, it's easier to say signs, through 12 signs of the zodiac. And it's those 12 sign energy that we as evolving souls are working with. Now, let me lead on. If we were in another solar system somewhere else in another part of the galaxy and the planets in that solar system moved over completely different star patterns, beings living on that planet or any planet in that solar system will have a whole different series of energies to evolve with, work with, grow with, understand with. But
right.
This is our unique one. This is the energies that we're working with and growing with and evolving with. The energies of what we call Aries and Taurus and Gemini and Cancer and Leo, et cetera, all the way through. And so that's why a planet could be in any of those signs. That's why our solar system in its great year, 25,900 and something, goes through those
20.
Signs.
I did that last, 920, yes, I did. I did the math on that last week.
And it's not quite 26,000, but it's pretty close.
Yeah,
and
really close,
that's
yeah.
why those are the energies that anyone who incarnates on the Earth or in our solar system will be working with, learning, growing, and evolving with and through. Now, what if we incarnate in another solar system somewhere else in a galaxy in which planets moving in their galaxy move through entire different fields of stars and have completely different energy patterns to learn and work with? And that's what
astrology apparently is. What leaped to mind was, the Sirians, Pleiadians, Arcturians. It's like, I think there's like three of them that are out there. So it's like, they're part of our star patterns, but would they be in different systems, or would they still see some
yes.
of the same stuff that we do? Okay.
Let's say Arcturus was the sun, and the planets that are moving around Arcturus, wherever Arcturus is situated in its position in the galaxy, the Milky Way, and its planets, those planets would see space totally different from the way we see space from our solar system. And therefore, planets would move across completely different star fields, and those star fields would give a completely different characteristic set, characteristics we may not even be able to comprehend. And beings that live on any of those planets with the star Arcturus would be working on a totally different way of being. Plus, not only that, the star itself would have an energy through its own father-mother solar system, the one that it's sending its life force out to. So apparently, you asked me earlier, where did astrology come from? And the best answer is it must have been delivered to the human consciousness and race from beings outside of our world, and it must be a perpetual energy that exists for all living things, no matter where you are, and
cool.
no matter what galaxy you're living in, and no matter what solar system you're living in that galaxy. Now, that
right.
sounds really nuts to a lot of people who are scientific. They're saying, well, he's getting really way out now. But what I'm trying to say is our signs are the 12 ways of being in the world for us, Aries
right.
through Pisces. Those are the signs that we're working with, evolving with, learning. And that's why planets are in those signs. I can't even think of something right off. They're not in another completely different faraway constellation that we may map in the sky that isn't in the belt of the zodiac. This little enclosed belt completely has no beginning and end, and it's a circular belt in which all the planets move through, and they don't vary out of it. They can get to the edge of the belt and push to the edge, or just, you know, travel at the edge of it, but they don't go way out to some other pattern of stars. They stay within the confines of that belt. It's northern limit, central point, and southern limit. It is across that belt that these signs of the zodiac exist, and it's across this belt that these planets move. So we must understand every soul, including animal life, that's evolving on this planet are working with the energies of these 12 signs of the zodiac.
Right.
Now, what if we have some galaxy somewhere that has a huge field of movement? What if they have 36 signs of the zodiac?
Wow.
That their planets
or
move across.
Celestial, yeah.
And
wow.
That would be what those beings who live in that part of space would be working with. Apparently, astrology works from the
point
that
where
you
you're
are
at.
Situated at, and the energies that surround that point as your planetary bodies around you move through various star fields, they work with the energy of that particular cluster of stars.
Right. Right. You know, now here's another question that came about. It's like, so what happens when, you know, like say a baby's born early? It's like, now I know I'm gonna pick on my own daughter here for a moment, but it's been commented on in the chat about children being born early here. So I know with my daughter's first one, he was like a week late, and then with the second one, he was almost 3 weeks early. So instead of being born in the sign of Cancer, which he was, you know, his due date like right in the center there, he was born in Gemini, and then almost the same thing. It's like the third one, the littlest one. She probably should have been, I mean, her initial due date, she was going to be a Leo, but instead she was born early and she ended up as a Cancer. That was the one that was born on your and Bonnie's birthday. So how does that, I mean, is that one of those, you know, like meant to be things? Or when a child is, you know, I'll say, you know, born early or whatever, earlier than their expected date, it's like, is that one of those soul contracts? Is that one of those things where do they kind of carry maybe more traits of the sign that they would have been? Or how does that kind of work?
Well, you were getting close to it a moment ago. What we tend to get caught up in the specifics of this is the due date, this is the timing of birth, and labor will be starting and birthing should be happening on this day. And as a rule, it tends to happen. However, what we forget, or maybe don't know at all, is the baby coming into the world is in charge of the birth, not us. We
right.
are the conduit for providing the baby's body and the parents of the baby. But the baby is in charge of that birth because when they take their first breath, that chart pattern stays with them this entire life. So if they are early or late from their due date, it means that the chart on their due date would not have suited them and their soul evolving in this lifetime. They were born early or later because that pattern that existed when they were born, either eventually or before, and took their first breath, was the pattern they were supposed to be having in this life. So in other words, there really aren't any premature dates, and people will say to me, all right, I can disprove that. What about cesareans? I just decided to have a cesarean, and the baby was born. Well, they still aren't realizing the baby is in charge of that birth, not them. You may have made the decision, or the doctor may have made the decision to say the cesarean is going to happen now, and the baby's born and takes their first breath. But actually, that was predestined, too, for that baby to be born then. So whether we think we can change it by cesarean or whether it changes by early or late from the actual due date, it's the soul coming in who has complete charge of what day they're born and the planetary patterns, because that's already preset, the planetary patterns for what their soul is going to be working with in this life, and they're just merely born at that time that it is preset for.
Wow. There was one other thing when you were talking about constellations, because I was kind of thinking about that. Because, I mean, I know there's more constellations. Isn't there like, I don't know, like a dragon and like Chiron, you know, it's like, I mean, aren't there some other constellations?
There's constellations all over. There's the Swan, Cygnus. We don't
so
happen
how,
to have
so
our
how
planets
how
move across
those were
the
how can
face
we only
of
have
Cygnus,
the 12
Swan.
Instead of like all those?
There's constellations all over the sky. And from the some you cannot even see in certain hemispheres, like the very interesting looking one called the Southern Cross. You can see in the Southern Hemisphere, but you cannot see that in the Northern Hemisphere.
Of course,
you cannot see the North Star in the Southern Hemisphere. There's so many different things that you can see from different parts of the Earth itself. And yes, there's names for all kinds of constellations, but it's only these 12 that actually make the connection in the belt of the zodiac that the planets move across. Now, someone said, the little tiny tip of Cetus, the whale, comes in. And it's very interesting. If it comes in, it touches the outer edge of the belt of the zodiac, and it doesn't push in and become a whole constellation within it. These are complete, whole, complete constellations. When one starts, the other one ends. And when that one ends, the next one starts. They link one to the next to the next to the next, and they form an entire beltway of star field patterns.
So how come more of those constellations were not used or entertained as part of astrology? That's, you know, that's what kind
oh,
of
that's
amazing.
Because the planets
like.
Don't move across the face of those constellations. In other words, wherever Cygnus is in our field of a star map or the other sign, I just use that one, other names of ones, they don't move across that field of stars. They only move across the field of stars that make up the constellation of Aries, Taurus, Gemini, etc.
Okay, right. Okay.
And our astrology is called tropical astrology, and this is another thing you need to all know, because we have it tropical astrology because of the Tropic of Cancer, the Tropic of Capricorn. The beginning of the astrological new year is when the sun sits on the equator and is entering into the sign of Aries. It moves up to the Tropic of Capricorn, Cancer, and it lines up with that tropic on June 21st. And then it starts moving backwards again as the Earth tilts. The sun doesn't move. The Earth's angle tilts and puts the sun back on the equator again 21st or around the 21st of
September.
And then that's the entrance of Libra. And then the Earth tilts more for the southern hemisphere towards the sun, and the northern hemisphere starts getting cooler weather and eventually winter, and then the sun gets down to the Tropic of Capricorn and lines up with that on December 21st. We call this tropical astrology because the sun and the angle of the Earth is confined between the two tropical lines of the Tropic of Cancer to the north and the Tropic of Capricorn in the southern hemisphere, and also the equator crossing twice, once at the beginning of spring, once at the beginning of autumn. So it's called tropical because of that. And another reason is there is an international astrological New Year Day. Astrologers.
I was about to ask when is this, because none of this seems to coincide with the calendar, the Gregorian calendar that somebody just like arbitrarily set up. It's like, so when really, you know, astrologically, would we have a new year?
Well, the astrological new year is March 21st, that the sun enters Aries, and this is because Aries is the first sign of the zodiac, and the day that it leaves Pisces and enters Aries is the astrological new year, and that means it enters the first sign of the 12 and begins a 12-year cycle, a 12-month cycle, excuse me. And then, interestingly enough, sometimes the sign of spring, Aries, starts the 20th of March. Sometimes it's the 22nd. So it's a little hard to pin it down, so they just arbitrarily chose the date that it almost always occurs on, which is March 21st. And so there was a move by astrologers a number of years ago to declare that the astrological New Year date, or the International Day of Astrology is what they called it. And it kind of took hold. And that's asked astrologers not only their New Year, but their day of celebrating astrology, because the beginning of the first sign of the zodiac is starting this day, and a new season is starting. If you're in the northern hemisphere, it's going to be spring. If you're in the southern hemisphere, it's going to be autumn.
Wow. That would be really cool. Yet one more day to celebrate. It's like, okay. But it would make more sense than some of the stuff that we have going on, that's for sure. Wow.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Things. And the only reason why we celebrate our New Year's now is largely, if you go back and study history, that was during the Saturnalia, the festival of Saturn. The sun entered Capricorn on or around December 21st, and that's the sign ruled by Saturn. And the Roman Saturnalia, which was celebrated for a really extended period of time, I'm not mistaken, was 1 week, maybe even 2 weeks.
12 days. There's a reason for the 12 days that they go. Yeah, it's like, but it was the 12.
It
was
then. I knew it was a long time. So that was almost 2 weeks. It was really very, very, very beloved and celebrated in a mass way by the Romans, and
because they were glad the sun was coming back. They thought the sun was dying until it, you know, it's like because they'd see it, you know, get the days were getting shorter and shorter, and it's like, and then they're like, oh, no, the sun's going to go away. And it's like, and then, you know, do that reversal, and it's like, and the days would start getting longer because the earth would tip back, and it's like, and then they started celebrating, oh, good, you know, it's like the sun's not dying, hooray.
It just goes to show how clearly observational people were. If we were taken away from society, all clocks, all calendars, would we actually be able to see the sun slowly, perceptively being up longer after December 21st in the Northern Hemisphere? That's how astute people were. They saw that. They knew that. They were aware of those subtle differences in timing, that the sun was no longer dying but starting to slowly give us more light. And that was also part of the festival, too. But that was such a powerful festival and such a beloved festival when the Romans eventually converted to Christianity, and through Constantine, that was deliberately set to be the time of the birth of Christ and eventually to be the time of the new year to counteract against the celebration of the festival of Saturn, the Saturnalia.
Wow. Right. All righty. Well, my goodness. We have 8 minutes left, John. Time flies and you're having fun.
I can't believe no one is calling or asking questions.
I know. I think we questioned the chat room out there. It's like I've got one other comment here. It's like because I kind of follow along with I have the Llewellyn, you know, like moon sign book, and I've discovered it's really wonderful for gardening. So how is that? You know, I'm going to kind of say, you know, the how to is like because I know there's different systems, and I know I get the Llewellyn book, moon sign book for gardening, and it's like for many years I had gotten the Farmer's Almanac, but it turns out that it's like a day or two off. It's like some hours off or something in there. It's like there's a different, I don't know, I can't remember if there's like a Placidian system or, you know, house system or something. I can't remember the two different types of astrology there, but I know what Llewellyn does astrologically, you know, works for gardening. And sometimes the Farmer's Almanac doesn't work as well. And, you know, I was kind of wondering about that. It's like, I mean, I know, and like I say, I know there's two, like, different systems that they plot things on, but I could never quite, you know, put my finger on what it was that was different. Any thoughts on that?
That's interesting. I'm not aware of the difference, but I will tell you a little bit about planting, and I'm not well-versed in this. I know that you want to plant a root crop when the moon is in Pisces, like carrots, beets. Well, even potatoes, things that grow underground. Or extensive underground usage from them. There are certain dates that you want to plant things for flowering, trees that flower or trees that bear a lot of flowers or plants that bear flowers. You usually want to do that when the moon is in Taurus or in Libra, because that will give a very showy and beautiful and continuously flowering plant during the season that they will flower. You want to do certain things, like, for example, even away from planting of organisms, living things, they even tell you when the moon is in Capricorn, that's when you want to lay cement foundations for sheds or for the basement of a house that you're eventually building, or lay posts into the ground. You know, to make a fence, you start putting the posts into the ground to build the fence. You do that when the moon's in Capricorn. Some signs are called barren signs, and some signs are called fruitful.
And there's semi-fruitful, too.
Well, the water signs are all fruitful, and that means Cancer, Scorpio, and Pisces are fruitful, so the moon is in a fruitful one right now.
Right.
Taurus is considered fruitful. I believe Sagittarius is considered semi-fruitful. And Libra is considered semi-fruitful, I believe. Now, Aries is considered a barren sign. Gemini is barren. Leo is
Aquarius.
Barren. Aquarius is barren. Virgo is barren. Capricorn is barren. So you don't
destroy
necessarily
weeds.
Want
I remember
to go
that. You destroy
and
weeds
put a
in
plant
those.
in the ground during a barren sign, or it won't grow, or it'll grow very slowly, or you'll get stunted growth, or you'll get less than positive results. Now, people who have been planting from the moon forever will swear by this, and they will say it works every time.
Yeah.
So they will know when to plant, and they will also even get to the point where they will know when to plant in the morning, in the certain hours, it's the best time to do it. They even get to that point because they got it to the point of specifics.
Wow, that's cool.
Don't you ever notice certain calendars will have a fish on it some days and
right.
not on another
Better
day,
days
and
for
they'll
fishing.
Say, that's the day to go fishing. Well, what they do
yeah.
is they know by the astrological alignment with the moon that that would be a day fish will bite a hook or bite bait, and you can catch them and take them out of the water. Fish,
nice.
You can have many more fish on a day when you get the symbol of fish on the calendar. For
gotcha.
Example, Pisces would be the best day, and this sounds so obvious it's almost comical. Pisces would be the best day to go fishing. That means the moon in Pisces. The moon in Pisces. See?
Wow, okay.
The moon is in a fruitful sign right now. It's in probably its most fruitful sign, Cancer, the crab,
okay.
and this would be a wonderful day for planting anything or transplanting anything because
uh-huh.
okay. this is, see, this is not, people say to me, well, how does this work? Because the plant is put into the ground and born into its new location of being in the world at that moment of time, or the seed is planted in the ground and where the plant will eventually be born at in that location at the time
right.
the moon is in this certain sign, and it will demark already whether it's going to be a wise time to plant or a very stupid time to plant. The worst thing people can do is just grab stuff and stick in the ground anytime. They really need
wow.
to watch and see whether it's a fruitful sign or a barren sign. Now, a barren
right.
sign like Capricorn, instead of going out there and planting, that's when you're going to lay cement foundations. That's when you're going to build a shed. That's when you're going to build a fence.
Right.
That's the time for stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. All righty. Well, you know what? We got a few moments here. It's like I'm gonna have you give your information again and how people can get a hold of you and you know, get a personal reading from you. And yeah. And
well,
next
folks,
week we're gonna think about 50
little
states.
Thumbnail readings on this show in the past where I did kind of a couple
right.
minutes of talking. That's not a reading. That's not even
right.
beginning to approach a reading. That's just kind of a scatter here and there in the person's chart. A reading is way more involved and complex than that. And that's why my readings last 2.5 hours. They are very, very lengthy because there is a huge amount of stuff to be covered and detailed information, dates to be given, timings to be given to the individual. And I record them and I send the people the email recording, which they download. But the readings last 2.5 hours, and the way you can reach me is by emailing me at livingastro@aol.com. And I need a person's city of birth or location, if they're not born in the city, location of birth, month, day, and year of birth, and time of birth. And I have to have the time. If you don't know the time, we can't do the reading. It has to be the time that's on a birth certificate, on a birth record. In other words, the time you came into the world, took your first breath, and we're now alive in this body.
Okay. All righty. There you have it, guys. And I'm going to give a shout-out. You know, thank you for all of our listeners, both people who listen live, and thank you for our chatters, and thank you for our people who are listening to us in archives, and thanks for being with us today. And say, Bonnie will be back next week. We thought she was going to be back this week, but she didn't make it back this week. She is still up north having all kinds of fun, said with a little tongue-in-cheek there with that, but you know, but she will be back hopefully, or at least have some kind of computer service by next and join us. Oh, goodness. In the meantime, Ron, this has been amazing and fun as always. It's like you are just, you're such a wealth of knowledge. I love it. I just absolutely love it. Love talking with you. I love having you on.
Well, thank you. I enjoy it too so very much.
All right, and that was our 90-second moment there, so it's like we might just finish off a little bit early here. But anyway, unless you can think of anything else that you want to share real quick, upcoming week?
No,
or...
I didn't really make the connection between the Llewellyn book versus the
Farmer's Almanac.
I think that's
yeah,
very
ben
interesting
Frank,
you brought
I think
that
it's
up.
Called a... Yeah, the poor. Yeah, so yeah. Maybe look that up because. So there's some homework. It's like we'll get to hear the list of states alphabetically, and so I can hear what they are next week, which I think will be cool. It'll be a great reference. I'm
All
definitely
right.
down that one. And then
that will
and,
do.
And Yeah, and then maybe you can kind of, you know, if you have an opportunity to get someplace, you know, like to a library bookstore or something, and just kind of, you know, kind of compare those two and see what you think, you know, and just kind of see, because, and like I said, I can't remember exactly, but they said, you know, there's in astrology, there's two different like house systems or something like that. There's Placidian and there's tropical, or I don't know, something like that. But it's like one of them, whatever Llewellyn uses is one way that, you know, is actually works. And it's like, and the Farmer's Almanac, I mean, it was good for many years. But when there started to be some, I don't know, transitions or whatever, it's like, it started not working as I actually went and looked at a second at another book. So, okay, we got 10 seconds. So, anyway, we will talk to you again next week.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
As always. All right. Thank you, guys. And we will see you tomorrow. We'll be back tomorrow with Annabelle. I believe it's going to be Annabelle and Brenda and perhaps Leslie. I've got to coordinate and see who we got on tomorrow. But we'll be back again tomorrow. So have an awesome day. Have an awesome week. And we'll see you again.